Hello, it's Danny Howe back again after quite a hiatus with another episode of Tales from Southern Indiana. I'm sure glad everybody has been tuning in and perhaps revisiting some of the older episodes that will only prove to you that my ability to repeat the same story over and over again has not subsided. But at any rate, I thought we might visit the topic in the old papers these days, back in the day, of indecency. And, you know, the notion of indecency has changed a little bit over time. I think when I was a kid, it took the form of B-movies, the sort of third movies you might see in the drive-in, campus swingers, naughty roommates, some ideas. They were just slightly, salacious. But it wasn't the sort of thing that concerned people back in maybe the 20s and 30s. So they were more concerned with certain films that didn't seem quite to that degree of indecent, but that nevertheless folks found objectionable, as well as manners of dress and some other activities that you wouldn't necessarily think of as being categorized necessarily as indecent, as opposed to maybe just sloppy these days. So here's one. It's from 1924 from the newspaper in my hometown, the Mitchell Tribune. The Archbishop of New Orleans said that the manner of dress of the modern woman is an invitation to insults. So what women do not seem to take into consideration, he said, is the fact that to be scantily clothed is far more shocking and immodest than not to be clothed at all. The one admits the facts of nature, the other hints at them in a suggestive and indecent manner. And the whole article seems to suggest to me that the Archbishop may have been a resident of a nudist colony. At any rate, that was his take. It would be preferable to be naked than to be suggestive. So, all right. And we also have a lot of movies that, again, the religious community was objecting to. Here's an article from 1934. The 30s seemed to be a big time to be protesting indecent films, because that was a bit before the morality codes that came into effect that regulated movies a bit more. And here we have a headline from my hometown paper again, and from the pastor of the church I attended when I was a kid. It says that indecent pictures are scored by a pastor. You don't see the word scored and used in that fashion anymore much. So that a type of moving picture is now being shown throughout the country is having a great influence on lowering the moral standards, according to Reverend Roth of the Presbyterian Church. And did a nice talk to the Rotary Club. These folks often came to the Rotary Club for speeches like this. Apparently the Rotarians enjoyed this a bit more than maybe the Kiwanis, who knows. So that it's not even necessary to attend the shows in order to know the type of picture which is now predominating. So the pastor had not actually gone to see these movies, but he knew what they involved. He said that there's evidence of the influence which pictures may be exerting on younger persons. The Reverend gave data which had been collected in Chicago. For some reason, Chicago was a place to go for this. Questions regarding attendance at shows were asked of 10,000 children, equally divided among school children, juvenile delinquents, and Boy Scouts. He said that the delinquents, this is the middle group, they led in show attendance. They were the first to show up for these indecent pictures. Then general school children, all and about. And finally, the least frequent attendance was from the Boy Scouts. After all, scouts are pretty busy with a lot of things that they have to do, learning to tie knots and say harsh words about their scoutmasters. At any rate, the ministerial aspect of society was determined to put a stop to some of these indecent pictures. And I thought I'd look some of these up that were labeled as indecent by name. And these are among the category that's, according to the church people objecting to this, these were indecent throughout the entirety of the film. So one is called Merry Wives of Reno. It already sounds suggestive. It says, imagine Lois take the train from New York to Reno to get quickie divorces. All right, that's pretty much the plot. We have the ninth guest. Eight guests at a deadly party are informed by the voice of their unknown host from the radio that they are his enemies and will all meet his ninth guest named Death. Not sure what's indecent about that. Apparently, just people meeting their demise was shocking and objectionable. And finally, Fog Over Frisco. Arlene, played by Bette Davis, by the way, is a spoiled, bored socialite, and she finances her extravagant lifestyle by exploiting her fiancé's access to her stepfather's brokerage firm and using her connection to steal security bonds for a crime boss. It's tough to follow all these connections here, but they end up with crimes and of a financial nature, and apparently these were considered wholly indecent as well. Certainly a categorization that didn't hold up given the news we find every day in our newscasts. But at any rate, now we have sort of the tail end of this kind of movies. We have plays that are also considered indecent from 1928 from the paper from Bedford, the county seat, the big city. It says, the play starred Mae West. She apparently wrote the play. This is from New York. And it was called Pleasure Man. And it said that the police raided the play after sitting through the entire thing and watching it, and they arrested Mae West, the entire cast, and all 64 members of the orchestra. So apparently the music must have been deemed indecent as well. And each one was released on $500 bail. That's an enormous amount of money in 1928. I'm not sure who came up with the $500 bail each for the 64 members of the orchestra, or why they perhaps might bother, especially if they didn't like the playing. And at any rate, said the this was the second arrest in a row for two plays written by Mae West, and she apparently was fairly content with this sort of publicity that came about. It said that this particular play dealt with female impersonators, and one of the police officers said it was the rawest play he had witnessed in years, so he'd seen quite a few, and apparently that was a big part of his job, is to see raw plays. And finally it ends with a note that despite the criticism of the play from the certain aspect of society, he said every available inch of space in the theater was filled last night. In fact, the arrest of these folks almost caused a riot. A large crowd of play attendees followed everyone to the police station, and who knows what might have happened then. And then, here we can finally get into a whole different category of indecency. This is a headline, 1908, from the Mitchell Commercial, one of the old papers that disappeared before I was born and grew up in Mitchell, Indiana. Is about people who spit. So there was a spitting problem even when I lived in Mitchell. It tended to be, I would have categorized it as indecent or at least gross. But at any rate, here we've got people who, this is the concern is people spitting in the post office. I mean, people could spit other places. It might not be indecent, but the secretary of the State Board of Health said that people who spit are dirty and indecent animals, and said that he wrote a letter to the postmaster of French Lick, Indiana, and said asking for some caution cards to be put up in the post office to keep people from spitting on the floor and against the wall. And so the postmaster wrote a letter back, said, "Dear sir, we're sorry we cannot at this time furnish you with anti-spit cards. This is because we are out of them, and they're being printed." Quite a demand for cards telling people not to spit. I expect that's because people would spit on the cards, but who knows? He said, "You have ample right and power, and we recommend that you post a sign ordering that no one spit on the floor." And he said, "You can have your assistant or the janitor throw out anybody who was caught spitting." And he agreed that the spitter is a dirty and indecent animal who not only claims the right to befoul floors and sidewalks, but also to spread disease. And he suggests that in lieu of a spitting card, that the secretary to the State Board of Health simply post the letter from the postmaster. So if you're about to spit and you see a letter in some detail that addresses that practice, you could postpone your spitting until you read it and at least decide whether you wanted to spit at it or not. And then we have a concern about people using foul language, which, according to the article, they learned when they were little children. It said that we would guard the young against the use of every word that is not strictly proper. Use no profane expression. Allude to no sentence that will put to blush the most sensitive. This article is, by the way, from 1882 from the Mitchell commercial. It said that when informed, it said many good men have taken sick and become delirious from using indecent language. And when they are restored to health, they say, well, they had no idea that they'd been doing it, but they had learned and repeated the expressions they had learned as little children. And so the warning here is, think of this, you who are tempted to use improper language, and never disgrace yourself or your friends. And my thought in reading it was, you know, when you're a little kid, you don't actually know swear words, and so you have to make them up. That's why you hear words like poopy head. And eventually, I suppose, they give way to something. But the notion is that if grown people repeat the word poopy head, then they could end up in an asylum. And then finally, apropos of nothing we've been talking about, I felt we would close out with a few news reports from the Mitchell Tribune in the era of the 911 call while Mitchell was trying to figure out what exactly 911 was supposed to be for. And so, you know, we have a bit of a suspicious activities in cemeteries. That's come up as a theme before. Is it a suspicious subject was seen in a cemetery? So if you saw someone in a cemetery and they didn't seem particularly upset or concerned about anything, they might be suspicious and you could call 911. And then this is elevated to another level. Here's a suspicious subject who set fire to a trash barrel. Now this could well be someone who had emerged from the grave and they had been in life a pyromaniac and they'd found their way to the first thing that would catch fire, which was trash in a trash barrel, and ignited it. That's my guess. Otherwise, I'm not sure why you'd call 911. I mean, if somebody crawled out of the ground, I might. Now, by 1996, Mitchell had a McDonald's restaurant, and there's all sorts of calls to 911 about McDonald's, sometimes involving people asleep in their cars or what have you. And this one, it said that there's someone's shooting customers, which would merit a call, certainly, but they're shooting them with a water gun. So apparently the customers took umbrage at that, and someone rushed to the phone and called the police. And then as things progressively get worse, and this is all in one day, this is May 29th, 1996, finally said officers were reported to be called to the scene of a dead animal. And we can only imagine what sort of animal we're talking about here. Perhaps it was a very large dead animal. Maybe it was one of those dead gorillas that we had an earlier episode in which we indicated that gorilla bites were a problem in Indiana for some reason. So we can only imagine. And at any rate, we're in every bit sympathetic with the efforts striving over time of the citizens of Southern Indiana to get some kind of a handle on how we could raise the moral standards in public displays of various kinds. And again, make that tough choice between just a few clothes and outright nudity. As always, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you spending time visiting with us, and we wish you all the best and talk to you soon.